It is Wednesday, May 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump says it remains to be seen whether his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place. Europeans and Iranians work to save the Iran nuclear deal, and Muslim Americans observe the start of Ramadan. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump says we'll have to see if his planned summit next month with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place after Pyongyang expressed sharp reservations about U.S. demands that it dismantle its nuclear weapons program.
We'll see what happens. We'll see. Time will tell.
Trump commented at the White House Wednesday. Trump said the U.S. will still insist on denuclearization by North Korea. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told his South Korean counterpart by phone Wednesday Washington continues to prepare for the meeting in Singapore June 12th between North Korean leader Kim and President Trump, despite Pyongyang's criticism of ongoing joint U.S.-South Korean Max Thunder military exercises. That meeting was thrown into doubt after the North canceled Wednesday's high-level inter-Korean discussions, a move so-called regrettable. Citing First Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs Kim Kaeguan, the official Korean Central News Agency Wednesday said, if the U.S. is trying to drive us into a corner to force unilateral nuclear abandonment, we will no longer be interested in such dialogue. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert expressed surprise Tuesday over the North's objection to the joint air combat drills.
I will say that Kim Jong-un had said previously that he understands the need and the utility of the United States and the Republic of Korea continuing in its joint exercises. They're exercises that are legal. They're planned well in advance. We have not heard anything from that government or the government of South Korea to indicate that we would not continue conducting these exercises or that we would not continue planning for our meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un next month.
Kim Kaeguan called it absolutely absurd to compare North Korea's nuclear program to that of Libya, an apparent reference made by White House National Security Advisor John Bolton, who suggested 2 weeks ago that when it comes to Pyongyang's denuclearization, what he has in mind is the Libya model, whereby dictator Muammar Gaddafi agreed to give up all his weapons of mass destruction in exchange for sanctions relief. Korea Society Senior Director Stephen Knopper counseled patience. He spoke to International Edition's Victor Beatty, suggesting that the North's motivation could be based on any number of reasons.
It could be a way of trying to appease reported hardliners and those who are engaging more. It could be Kim Jong-un's trying to get a better read of the tea leaves relative to the Americans and the South Koreans. It could be tactically a way of driving a further wedge between the United States and South Korea because North Koreans can say that they acted in good faith. But again, I wouldn't overreact on the issue because it is, while certainly a setback and certainly a challenge, not necessarily one that will result in the cancellation of the summit. I think we really do need to give it a little bit of time.
Aren't these joint drills something that are announced well in advance? This is not something that was a surprise to North Korea, was it?
Right, and it happened this time last year. So it takes place around Gwangju in the south. So it is not something that has any proximity to North Korea itself. But probably they felt that given the tone and tenor of recent meetings, the progress and the declaration at Panmunjom between the South Korean president and North Korean leader that there would be acts of good faith. They probably argue that they're doing that with the proposed shutdown of the nuclear site, the dismantlement that's scheduled May 23rd to 5th. But we'll see whether they're trying to test that, whether they're sincerely irritated by the fact that such an exercise would take place.
Do you see any input by President Xi Jinping of China that would cause Kim Jong-un to make such a concern known publicly?
Well, it does appear that the North Koreans have very much sought Chinese counsel, and there have been a couple of meetings now two within 40 days between Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un. Clearly, the Chinese would be happy to see a downtick in exercises and eventually the withdrawal of U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula. But I think it's probably a bit much to think that there's a grander scheme at play here. I think it is probably best kept looking at whether or not they're trying to test the administration in Washington and see exactly what level of tolerance there might be on this. But they're going to push back, and there will be challenges along a very, very complex path of negotiation.
That's Stephen Nauper of the Korea Society. He said if the North-South meeting is eventually rescheduled and U.S.-North Korean summit preparations continue apace, this may just represent nothing more than Pyongyang testing the resolve of Washington. It is time now for social media. Well, trending today is hashtag Trump Tower. It concerns the 2016 meeting among Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and a Russian lawyer. The Trump presidential campaign was apparently seeking negative information on Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. However, the lawyer, Natalia Veselnitskaya, did not reveal the expected information. Author Michael Weiss tweets, "What does this prove? The Kremlin, via some pretty low-rent cutouts, tried to persuade the Trump team into doing something that would benefit the Kremlin using the false pretense of offering dirt on HRC. That's Hillary Rodham Clinton. What does this prove? The Kremlin, via..." He said, using false pretenses. David Axelrod, a former aide to President Barack Obama, tweets, "Whether or not crimes were committed is for Robert Mueller, who's heading an investigation into reports of Russia collusion, to report. But this much is even clearer after today's doc release. If the hashtag #RealDonaldTrump campaign didn't collude with the Russians, it wasn't for lack of trying." Well, Anthony Ray tweets, "Funny how we can get info on what happened at Trump Tower, yet we can't figure out what happened on the tarmac with Clinton and Lynch meeting." That refers to a meeting on a plane between former President Bill Clinton and then Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Well, also trending is hashtag polluting Pruitt. The Environmental Protection Agency is looking into Administrator Scott Pruitt's use of private emails. The EPA Inspector General is looking into whether Pruitt is properly preserving email records as required under federal law and whether the agency is properly searching all of his accounts in response to public records requests. There are current investigations regarding Pruitt's first-class travel, use of security on personal trips, pay for top political aides, and a condo deal with an energy lobbyist who later met with him, among others. Mom's Clean Air Force tweets, "I am worried you are spending all your time enriching yourself and your friends while betraying EPA's mission of protecting human health and the environment." And that's from Senator Tom Udall. C-SPAN tweets, "Senator Patrick Leahy to EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, you have to fly first class? Oh, come on." And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Afghan forces regain control of a city near the Iran border. President Trump says the U.S. has little to give in trade talks with China. A Senate panel backs Gina Haspel to head the CIA. And Anwar Ibrahim proclaims new dawn for Malaysia after his release from prison. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
There are two robotic rovers traversing and exploring the surface of Mars, NASA Spirit and Curiosity rovers. Now, as part of the upcoming Mars 2020 mission, NASA plans to send a small autonomous helicopter along with its next-generation rover to the Red Planet. The space agency says it plans to fly its Mars helicopter on a full 30-day test flight operation in the skies above the Red Planet surface. NASA says the tests will include up to 5 flights that will fly incrementally farther distances of up to a few hundred meters and for durations that will eventually be as long as 90 seconds. The space agency plans to launch the Mars 2020 mission in July or August of 2020, with touchdown on the Red Planet expected for some time in February 2021. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Chinese soybean purchases plant seeds of concern for U.S. farmers. We'll have a report. European and Iranian foreign ministers in Brussels agreed to find answers to a series of key practical issues in the coming weeks to salvage the nuclear deal after the Trump administration's decision to pull out of it. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more for VOA.
European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini said European and Iranian experts have already started meeting to hash out a series of challenges, from maintaining and deepening economic, transport, and financial relations to protecting European companies doing business with Iran. Despite some reported calls for a new or broader deal, Mogherini said on the table was the original agreement, as it was signed by 6 world powers in 2015.
If we want to save this deal, which is not an easy exercise, but if we want to save this deal, we know that the sooner we manage to do it, the better and the easiest it will be. Again, it will not be easy, but if I can use the metaphor that some raised around the table, we all have a relative in intensive care and we all want to get him or her out of the intensive care as soon as possible.
Mogherini spoke after talks between European foreign ministers and their Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, on Tuesday. Washington's withdrawal has left many doubting whether Europe can save it, and the Europeans are now also looking for ways to protect their companies dealing with Iran from possible U.S. sanctions. Zarif said Tehran wants the EU to guarantee it will maintain all the benefits it has enjoyed under the deal. President Donald Trump said the agreement was insufficient in curbing Iran's nuclear program, Iran's role in Middle East conflicts, and addressing what happens after it expires. But Mogherini said the EU believes the nuclear deal should be considered separately from other areas of disagreement with Iran.
We are, and we've always been clear on this, there are more chances, more possibilities to open avenues for discussions with Iran on other issues if the Iranian deal stays in place, rather than not.
European leaders will be discussing the nuclear deal at a summit in Bulgaria. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Muslims around the world are observing the holy month of Ramadan, a period of fasting, reflection, and communal gatherings. Muslim Americans of diverse backgrounds and national origins gather in Islamic centers across the United States to worship and celebrate their faith. VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy has more on Ramadan in the United States, which began Tuesday.
Muslims in America observe Ramadan just like the rest of the Islamic world with a set of traditional rituals. Families shop at halal meat stores, prepare iftar meals to break their dawn to dusk fasts with family and friends, pray together, and help the poor. Shakir Sayed is the imam of Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in Virginia, which serves a Muslim community from 42 different nationalities.
Ramadan becomes a very helpful opportunity to bring people together, those who come from different cultural and ethnic backgrounds and linguistic backgrounds. We all speak English, so we use English as a unifying language. And we do all the activities to accommodate everybody, especially in Ramadan.
Shakir says The center provides Muslims free meals to break their daily fasts and organizes nightly prayers during Ramadan. While Muslim Americans are fasting during the day, they are surrounded by non-fasting colleagues at work. For Egyptian American Ibrahim Radi, that's not a problem.
I have to fast because it's my duty to fast. It doesn't matter what everybody else is doing.
However, his wife Nadia misses the big family gathering in Morocco.
There's a big difference here. You don't have extended families. So instead of having like 10 people around the table, there's only the two of us.
The workday can seem even longer for Muslim Americans performing their religious duties during Ramadan. Amina Tambouche is originally from Senegal.
Everyone will cook some food and bring it, and we all eat together and we pray together and we talk about Muslim religion, you know, teach each other. And at work sometimes we go to pray together, like around lunchtime.
For Muslim American groups, Ramadan also has served as an occasion to educate the American public about the religious observance and the Islamic faith in general. That includes open houses at local mosques and Islamic centers, public lectures on Ramadan, interfaith iftar dinners, and TV ads reminding the public that Muslims are an integral part of U.S. society. Imam Shakir Said says his Islamic center invites Christian and Jewish Americans to iftar dinners every Wednesday as a way of interfaith dialogue during Ramadan. Interfaith dialogue thrives during the month and helps to better understanding among followers of different faith, as Keith Ellison, the first Muslim American member of Congress, explains.
It's a critically important dialogue for us to have. All people of all colors, all cultures, and all faiths need to come together to talk about points of difference so we can discover how we are unified.
Since the early 1990s, U.S. presidents have issued Ramadan greetings each year to the more than 1.5 billion Muslims worldwide. Imam Shakir Said believes the presidential greetings have helped to raise awareness among Americans about the month of Ramadan. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. As U.S. farmers head to their fields to plant this year's crop, they face new challenges created by Chinese threats to impose tariffs on some of their products. It's the latest salvo in an escalating trade dispute that has farmers warily watching fluctuating commodity prices as the United States Department of Agriculture projects net farm income in 2018 to reach a 12-year low. VOA's Kane Faraba has more from Illinois.
Farmer Scott Halpin is entering another year of high prices for seed and fertilizer. Prices for the corn and soybeans his family is planting on farmland outside Morris, Illinois.
The equipment's expensive, land's expensive, and it costs a lot of money to put the crop in the ground.
Now there is the threat of Chinese tariffs on U.S. soybeans, a retaliatory move in the wake of pending U.S. tariffs on Chinese aluminum and steel that could further impact Halpin's bottom line.
Soybeans make up about just under half of our crop rotation, and it's a real important part of our farming operation here.
And there are reports that buyers in China, the world's top consumer of soybeans, have stopped purchasing supplies from the U.S. even before tariffs are in place.
It can hurt when things happen on a daily basis. Just kind of uncertain times here in farming.
Uncertain but not unbearable, says Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Futures Group and a contributor to Fox Business News.
Even though China's talking tough, they realize that they cannot get into a trade war with the United States because they have a lot more to lose right now than we do.
According to the USDA, China imports about 63% of the total world export of soybeans and is the second largest export market for U.S. grain products.
The world's changed. There's not a lot of places that can replace American soybeans in the near term. So, and the tariffs are probably not going to be enough to change Chinese purchases, because at the end of the day, there's going to be a time and place where the only place they can get their soybeans that they're going to need desperately in their soybean meal is going to be the United States, even at a higher price.
Scott Halpin says he understands the big picture and the need for fair trade, but farmers could use a little security in tough economic times.
We understand that there's inadequacies in the overall trade, but yeah, it makes us a little uneasy that the soybean market is such a volatile part of the ag economy, and China's such a big player. We need China.
Or someone else to step up and take China's place.
I guess historically we know that the markets should come back and somebody will pick up the slack. If China's buying from another country, somebody else is going to be looking for our soybeans. It would just be nice to have more stability in it.
While the uncertainty isn't changing the Halpin family's overall plans this planting season, it could be a different story during harvest time later this year.
The prices and the markets dramatically affect how we do things on the farm.
So does the weather, the other great uncertainty all farmers face. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Morris, Illinois.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The latest class of Lao public health workers, supported by the United States government, graduated from the Field Epidemiology Training Program in Vientiane on April 30th. Associate Professor Dr. Bun Kong Siavong, Minister of Health for the Lao People's Democratic Republic, commonly known as Laos, presented graduation certificates to the trainees at a ceremony, also attended by Michael Klein, Chargé d'Affaires of the U.S. Embassy, Dr. Xinyoung Su, World Health Organization, or WHO, Regional Director for the Western Pacific, and Dr. Juliet Fleischel, WHO representative to Laos. The Field Epidemiology Training, or FET, program in Laos was initiated in 2009 and has trained more than 70 health workers who returned to their home provinces and implemented the latest techniques in detection, investigation, and response to known and emerging health threats across all 18 provinces of Laos. The program empowered health officials at all levels to use evidence-based approaches for decision-making in response to disease outbreaks in recent years, a process that is further strengthened as each new cohort of FET program graduates complete the training and return to their field assignments. FET graduates are recognized by senior public health officials at national and provincial levels for their technical competencies to support evidence-based decision-making, said Michael Klein, U.S. Chargé d'Affaires to Laos. One important factor in the program's effectiveness has been the participation of medical experts from a variety of ministries, which shows the interconnected ways that health threats can be detected and investigated, regardless of whether evidence of a new threat first appears in a local health clinic, at a border crossing or police station, or in an agricultural market where animals might show the first sign of an emerging threat. This is the ninth cohort of FET graduates supported by the U.S. government, said U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires Klein. This program clearly demonstrates our commitment to the Lao-U.S. Comprehensive Partnership and our support for building stronger ties between our two countries as Laos works to achieve its sustainable development goals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.